Thanks, Rob. It's time for Studio 435 here on the Download, 720 WGN. This is our weekly segment showcasing some of the best live music Chicago has to offer in our All-State Showcase studio on beautiful Michigan Avenue. And tonight, no different, the band Material Reissue is here. The power pop legacy lives on from the band formerly known as Material Issue. The legendary trio of Jim Ellison, Ted Ansani, and Mike Zelenko enjoyed mainstream success with their 1991 album International Pop Overthrow and tracks like Diane and Valerie Loves Me. They followed up that album with Destination Universe and Freak City Soundtrack. In 1996, tragedy ended Material Issue. Singer and frontman Jim Ellison committed suicide. In 2011, the original members, Ted Ansani and Mike Zelenko, teamed up to bring back the band in honor of the 20th anniversary of International Pop Overthrow. Phil Angotti was tapped to sing. The band, Material Reissue, played Taste that year. They played Summerfest. They're all over the place. And 5 years later, the band, they're still together. The trio is back on stage at the Metro on March 4th. They're sharing the bill with the Bad Examples and the reunion show for the Lilacs. And they are here tonight, stripped down, ready to play the 1991 single, Renee Remains the Same. Guys, take it away.
Is she going out tonight? Is she wearing your shirt? Is she driving your car? She was the one who was most likely to, but she never got through, and she better get back. And if we look at a yearbook picture, sure we'll see a face that looks a lot like now. She always wanted to be accepted. She was only rejected anyhow. Renee remains the same. Renee, she never changed. She's the same. Well, is she leaving the house tonight? Is she carrying you keys as she waves goodbye? He was the one who was most likely to, but he never got through, and it barely get by. And if we look in a family picture, sure we'll see a face that looks a lot like now. I only wanted to get her attention. I only got rejection anyhow. Renee remains the same. Looks a lot like now. I only wanted to get her attention. I only got rejection anyhow. Renee remains the same. Renee, she'll never change. She's the same. She's the same.
How great is that? Yeah! Material Reissue in Studio 435 tonight. That's Phil Angotti, Mike Zelenko, Ted Ansani. Material Reissue going to be on stage with the Bad Examples and the Lilacs. That's their reunion show. It's just amazing to have you guys in studio. Hearing that music, it sounds wonderful. All right, let's take a break. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back, get you guys around the table, and talk a little Material Reissue here on the Download, Studio 435. Stay with us. Studio 435 here on the download, 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. The band Material reissue in studio with us tonight. They are around the mics. Ted Ansani, Mike Zelenko, and Phil Angotti here. They are playing on the 4th, March 4th, with the Bad Examples and the Lilacs. That's the reunion show. It's a big show.
The Lilacs.
Yeah, yeah, right, right.
And I heard at the top before we started playing, was that a Green song I heard? That was Up All Night by Green, who actually I play drums for.
Oh, really? Yeah. See, there you go. Beats by Zim, Pete Zimmerman in there. Yeah. So let's talk about this. I mean, this was a project, Ted, that, you know, I mean, this was a 20th anniversary project, Material reissue. I mean, the idea of celebrating that great record.
Yeah.
Talk about it. It's been a couple years since that, but you're continuing to play.
It had been a while since Mike and I had played together. And we realized that the record company was going to go ahead and re-release. They repackaged the International Pop Overthrow with some outtakes, maybe a live track or something.
I think they remastered it, too.
Remastered it and put it out as a 20th anniversary edition. So we, at the time, I don't know if we were talking about playing already or not. International Pop Overthrow Festival was coming through town, which is another festival that has all kinds of pop bands and power pop bands play in different cities throughout the United States. So we were asked to play that, and it just coincided and made a nice nice package deal for everyone involved.
We weren't really asked. I think we just kind of like was like, ding, ding, ding. It's 20 years since our album came out. Wouldn't it be cool to play again? And let's grab Phil, old friend of ours from back in the 90s. Phil was in a band called The Idea.
Yeah, of course.
Phil is a great singer, great songwriter as well. And like I said, he was friends of ours from back when, so he was our first choice to do it. And the idea was to play the album from front to back, like, you know, like a lot of groups will do. They're, records that people enjoy from front to back. So we did it in sequence.
Doing that, getting back together to play the record front to back like that. What were the emotions that went along with that? I mean, to be 20 years after the fact, Jim's not here. What was it like to sit down and rehearse that, but then also get up on stage and play those songs again to an audience?
Well, you know, I think, you know, when I contacted Ted about it, he was up for it. And we were both excited to the idea of doing it, especially having someone like Phil, you know, who could fill in and sing within Jim's range and all that stuff and play the guitar parts. We wanted to do it as a three-piece because the band was a three-piece, and to recreate the live that dynamic. But other than being excited about it, we were a little – I was at least a little – had some reservations about it because I was afraid no one would show up. And I was like, well, if no one shows up, that would really suck. But then it turned out that we just like – put it out. You know, we contacted David Bash from International Pop Overthrow Festival, IPO, and he gave us a slot at the Abbey, and it like sold out
like a
month before, and there were people like outside, like we're down here in Michigan, there were people like standing out the window. So it was really successful and fun, and we were very pleased.
Yeah, and the initial rehearsals were slightly intimidating. It's just that we hadn't played these songs in so long.
Right.
And I don't think we had played them all together as one unit, especially in order, and playing them all with Phil, too. And then, you know, it was just, dusting off the cobwebs and ironing everything out and making sure we had all the parts covered.
Right.
After a few rehearsals, we were rehearsing at
Avenue N, at his store.
So there's plenty of guitars to choose from and amplifiers and stuff to get the sounds that we wanted, but I think after the second and third rehearsal, we all of a sudden started feeling that fire build up. And you said you saw us in the past. So
we
definitely
did.
Had a fire on stage. We were very energetic. And we could feel that kindling and coming up. And we just knew we were going to really dominate.
It's amazing because, you know, I mean, it's kind of you guys. I think about it as a Columbia College, so it would have been early 90s, right? And at that time, I mean, it was a very, not unlike what we see with bands today, whether it be Twin Peaks or Chance the Rapper, where you're like, there's a pride that goes along with the fact that Material Issue was from Chicago, that there was this, you know, you've been in Chicago and you're like, and watching you guys not only have success here and, you know, being able to play the big places like a Vic or the Metro, but to then hear your songs being played on the radio and to have, you know, your stuff on MTV. I mean, there was a point where it was like we got to watch you break. When you think back to those days, I mean, I guess it would be right on this record, on International Pop Overthrow, talk about those days about, you know, being on MTV and being a band from Chicago that was breaking.
Well, I think what made it special for Chicago and for that time was the atmosphere of the music business at the time. I mean, we had like Styx and Cheap Trick and the band Chicago, but they were kind of like their own entities, and they weren't like, you know, but we had come up from like a scene of other bands, you know, like the Smashing Pumpkins and Urge Overkill, Green, who else? Bad Examples, who we're playing with.
Sure.
Shoes were from the area. But there was this, this scene of, in the late 80s, playing small clubs like Lounge Acts and Batteries Not Included and West End and others. Like Metro back then for us was like the big.
Yeah, right.
That was the big gig, you know. Like you had really arrived, you know, like. And, you know, this whole, like, notion of alternative rock music that was, at that time, you know, in the late 80s on MTV, you know, it was, like, all Poison and, like, hair bands and stuff like that.
Right.
And we couldn't relate to that. So when we started having some success signed a major label deal, we had brought everyone else with us in a way, and I know that it had helped Chicago and other bands to be exposed.
Well, I mean,
to
you guys, I
major
mean,
labels.
It's interesting because Material Issue was ahead of its time in the way that you think of the bands you even mentioned. I mean, you would play with Smashing Pumpkins or maybe a Urge Overkill, and they had success as well, but their successes, the records that made them big and famous, came after Material Issue. They came, you know, the mainstream albums of that we know, the Siamese Dreams and the...
Yeah, I mean, sort of, though, because Urge Overkill was, in a way, was a bigger band than Material Issue, being on Touch and Go and being a pretty reputable indie rock band. And I actually have a flyer from a place called Club Stadola, which was on
Belmont
near Cicero, and it was Smashing Pumpkins, Material Issue, and Urge Overkill.
Wow.
And that was in like 89 or 90 or something. It was like 30 people there.
Wow.
But Urge was like, you know, I mean, they were on Touch and Go, and Touch and Go had all these other great bands, like Big Black and, you know, others. Like, I can't think of.
Well, I don't want to disparage, the, you know.
But I was just going to say, like.
But you were the first, you had the mainstream appeal at that point.
Sure. I mean, well, you know, Gish came out in 91, you know. But we with that first album, we went straight to the major label thing, and they threw us completely into, like, we were the top priority, and and they really pushed us, and they wanted us to be their band for the 90s, you know. So yeah, that was an exciting year for us.
When you think back to those days, Ted, when you think about that moment of being sort of on a mainstream record, major record company and you being their priority, I mean, are those good memories for you guys?
Oh, sure.
I mean, are those the memories that you're like, oh, that was Material Issue, or was it do you have the challenges a lot of bands talk about? They don't like being on those record labels.
No, we had no problem with it. As a matter of fact, you know, getting from city to city, we were in a different city every day, basically, and a different venue every night. We'd hear ourselves on the radio. We'd, you know, pretty much every morning we would be waking up. They'd take us to some couple of radio stations, and we got to promote our show for that evening. So we were definitely getting airplay. We were promoting ourselves. And we just saw it building. And then, you know, we happened to be somewhere, I don't know, Oklahoma, and we get word that MTV's going to start playing our video, you know. And right away we called home and told our friends and our family, you know, hey, we're going to be on TV tonight, you know.
Yeah, we never did anything that was against our that we didn't want to do. And then when you have that kind of support, I mean, for us, it was like, well, we're here to work.
Yeah.
We're willing to work. We're willing to go on tour, to go to the radio stations and all that stuff. And we had like full days of, like, we would pull into a town and get picked up by a local rep from the radio station and or from the record company. So it was great, you know, and it was, they didn't ask us to do anything or change our music in any way or say anything or do anything that we didn't want to do. So to have that support is awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, we heard a lot about our Chicago style work ethic. They were very impressed with that. We had we never whined about getting up at 8 a.m. to get to some radio station, or, you know, whatever. We were more than happy to work and promote. And that's, maybe it was because we were so young at the time. Mm. We really didn't know any better.
We were on the road a lot.
We liked it, though. I mean, you know, yeah, it was fun living on a bus, yellow submarine or whatever it was.
Ted Anzani, Mike Zelenko, and Phil Angotti are in studio. They are Material Reissue. They're playing at the Metro coming up here on March 4th. All right, so let's get you guys back behind the microphones. What are we going to hear here?
We're going to do Diane from International
classic.
Pop Overthrow.
Diane, come on. Doesn't get any better than that, right? Diane, so great, from International Pop Overthrow. Like I said, Ted Anzani, Mike Zelenko, and Phil Angotti. We got to bring Phil in the conversation after. We'll talk some more after the news. We'll get a song here, and then we'll get to the news. Again, they're playing at Metro on March 4th, sharing the bill with the Bad Examples and the Lilacs. It's a Lilacs reunion show, which is exciting. But right now, we are going to hear some music from International Pop Overthrow. This is the track Diane. Come on, who doesn't remember Diane? All right, hold on 1 second. Bob is getting back, and we are ready for Diane Material Reissue here in Studio 435. Take it away, guys. Material Reissue in studio. That's the track Diane from International Pop Overthrow. Material Reissue playing on March 4th, sharing the bill with the Bad Examples and the Lilacs. They are in studio tonight, the Allstate Showcase studio here on Michigan Avenue. Ted Anzani, Mike Zelenko, and Phil Angotti here in studio. We'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll do the news. And then we'll talk some more about material reissue. Stay with us. Thanks, Rob. It's a download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman at Studio 435. Every Monday night, we bring you the best Chicago's got to offer in terms of live music, and tonight's no different. Material reissue in studio. The power pop legacy lives on from the band Material Issue. In studio, Ted Ansani, Mike Zelenko, and Phil Angotti. They are playing March 4th, sharing the bill with the Bad Examples and the Lilacs. What a lineup. Come on. I mean, that's a great 90s lineup. You're going to go see it at Metro on the 4th.
We're not dead yet.
No. Right. Well, I mean, you know, the Phil, it's amazing to me. I mean, we didn't bring you into the conversation. When approached to do this work, and you guys have known each other for years, but to do this work, to essentially be Jim Ellison, to this idea of you know, such a distinct voice, is that a challenge to do that?
It's a challenge to make it sound as authentic as possible, but honestly, it's very easy for me because we have similar voice timbre. We both grew up listening to the same music, obviously.
Yeah.
We have the same influences. We have the same upper register, so it's real natural. So I'm not so much imitating Jim, although I try to grab some nuances of, you know, we actually imitate Jim's talking voice more than we do his singing voice. These guys do it great. But, you know, there's like little things, you know, he's got a little bit of a sneer to his voice sometimes, like when he's singing, you know, like going through your purse, he's got a great, you know, and you light it too, and yeah, you know, and some of that attitude, I do try to put some of that in, but I'm still mainly just trying to sing the song as good as possible. But I put a little of that in there without making it sound like I'm totally imitating.
Right,
it's nice that it works. And it's just a lot of fun because I really am a big fan of the music. I love the song.
It's amazing.
Yeah, and we weren't interested in being like, you know, we would never ask Phil to, like, you know, sound more like someone else or sound more like Jim, you know. And to me, it that would be like being in a cover band that you were actually in.
Yeah, right, right.
So we just see it as like, and that's why we kept it as Material Reissue, because Material Issue never officially broke up. You know, I mean, Jim passed away, and it was just that Ted and I decided to not go on as Material Issue without him. So I guess this is the next best thing. So we don't want to, like, you know, that was then and this is now, and we're doing the songs from then.
You know, I guess take us back to that decision. You know, for you guys, Jim passes away, you decide no more Material Issue. I mean, you could have done the same concept, brought Phil in or brought other singers in and tried to recreate the magic that you had from the records before. I mean, it was 1996. What was really at the core of you guys calling it quits or not carrying on with Material Issue?
I think we were ready for a break, definitely, and we really hadn't taken much of a break. I had two kids by that time here in Chicago, and so I was ready to just kind of take a step back from the whole industry for however long. I hadn't really thought it out. And I know after Jim died, I was kind of thinking, like, what are we going to do now? How do we carry on? And it was, at the time, for me, it was a good decision personally to just stop playing and concentrate on my family.
Yeah.
But then it started kind of bubbling back up. And
yeah, we were on the road for basically, I mean, well, we worked. It wasn't like International Pop Overthrow was like, that was our, we were a band for 3 years
before
put out our own records.
Right.
And we were touring in my van for like 3 years before we got our deal. So, and that just never stopped from the, you know, from struggling in the van and having no money and then getting a deal and getting a little more comfortable and then really, really working. And we were one of those bands that wasn't so much like, you know, it was more like, how much are you off the road than you're on the road? We were on the road so much. You know, we're doing over 200 dates a year.
That Chicago work ethic.
Yeah.
So that, and then when that all came, you know, and then of course you have to deal with, you know, with losing the leader of the band and main creative element of the band as far as songs went. So it was just like, what do we do now? And then honestly, I don't think we ever really thought about doing, you know, there were people that approached us too. It was like, oh, well, you should check out this guy should be there. And someone mentioned some other people and it's like, no, you know, it just didn't, it was almost like, you know, like Nirvana going on without Kurt Cobain. It just didn't make sense to us.
Well, let me ask you guys, I mean, it's been 20 plus years now, you know, 1996 and Jim took his life. You know, I think back to that time and it was such a public thing, right? I mean, it was a public thing. There were news reports and MTV and all this kind of stuff about that story and Jim. You know, for you guys, and not just as bandmates, but as Phil, the just the music community that was around it. I mean, it was a pretty emotional time. Talk about that. I mean, reflecting on that from 20 years ago, the death of Jim Ellison.
It was horrible because not only are you losing a good friend, you know, you're losing a band member. You're losing someone you've been working with very, very closely for 10 years, right? Mm-hmm. You know, and we started together as kids, you know, and Jim was a couple years older than us, then 10 are about the same age. Jim was about 4 years older than us. And, you know, I always looked up to him and stuff. So for me, it was like, I just remember not wanting to like play at all, not wanting to like do any kind of music stuff. The last person I wanted to talk to was some kind of record company person, kind of like giving me some sort of like pitch as to like what, you know, we should do next. And frankly, our band at that point, we had some good success, put out 3 records on Mercury Polygram, but we were having a bit of a hard time, you know, staying in and staying relevant with all these other great bands that were coming out. So, it never crossed my mind to sort of pick up on it right after that or soon after that.
Ted, what were some of the emotions that, you know, I mean, obviously losing a friend and a bandmate, but the concept that it was such a public story too. I mean,
it was total shock for us, I think, personally and individually, but people who knew Jim really, I think, could connect with his personality for the most part. He was definitely very friendly to everyone he met. He could carry on a conversation with anybody sitting at a bar. You know, we'd do a sound check and then kind of separate from the stage and go our own ways. And somebody would just walk right up to Jim and he'd be more than happy to strike up a conversation and buy you a drink and hang out and say, hey, coming to see us tonight or whatever, you know. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, on many different levels here in Chicago, people that knew him, the people that we had met working with record companies, radio stations, record stores, outlets, people, so many people had the chance to meet him and get to know him that I think that's kind of why it was so widespread. A lot of people knew him. He was definitely a very powerful personality.
Yeah, definitely.
Powerful for sure. He was a bit abrasive too. And I think in Chicago, there were certain people like, you know, I'll just say like at the time, the Wicker Park type people before Wicker Park is what it is today. I think that they were a bit rubbed off by him a bit because Jim was an extremely intelligent guy, but he didn't have like a refinement to him, you know. And there were for me, I remember reading, I think, I can't remember who wrote it, but it was in the Reader, and it was a real negative, backhanded kind of thing, and kind of like, you know, and you know, as being a guy that everyone in town knew, especially in the music community, I was just like really hurt by it and angry reading that, and I just wanted to like drive over to
the Reader,
that publication, the
Reader.
I couldn't take it. I didn't want, I like shut, the, I didn't, I couldn't read that anymore.
Wasn't there, I mean, you go back to the 90s and there was this sort of indie pop kind of beginning to the 90s and it transitioned into a harder Pearl Jam, alt rock. It kind of moved from Chicago to Seattle. And you're right. I mean, and part of what I remember about you guys and the, you know, the death of Jim was, you know, the sort of snark that also came about, meaning that, you know, you'd have people that would say, I didn't really like their music. you know, or something like that to that effect based on, you know, someone passing. And I always, I think, I was just thinking about when you guys were talking, I'm like, man, I'm so glad Facebook wasn't around, you know, but to take away the legacy and what Material Issue meant to Chicago and to pave the way for the bands that came after. I mean, is a part that when you think back to those backhanded reader stories or the way that Jim Ellison just sort of was because of his bombastic kind of personality taken the wrong way.
There wasn't a lot of that, but even the small amount of it for me personally, you know, was hard. But I think definitely more a majority of people from who remember that time back then, who were around back then, give him the credit he deserves.
Yeah, Phil, I mean, as someone on the outside looking in.
Yeah, that's a good question. Like, I met Jim at a guitar show because we're both guitar fans. We like collecting vintage guitars. And that's how I kind of first met him. I got to know him a little bit better. And sadly, right before he died, I saw him a couple times. I was playing a show with Paul Collins and The Beat, and Jim was at The Beat Kitchen. He comes over. Hey, Phil, where's Paul? Could you bring him over? I'd like to say hi to him. And, you know, so I bring Paul over. This is Jim from Material Issue. And Jim actually came to see me play at a show, Thurston's, I think it was called. And Jim was, again, we were both power pop fans and songwriters that liked a lot of the same music. In fact, Jim booked me at Battery Not Included back when he was booking bands. Mm-hmm. So he did like my band. So we knew each other that way. You know, speaking from, like, a peer, you know, like, mm-hmm. I was very happy and proud of these guys. And I mean, there wasn't like jealousy. I was like, wow, a pop band doing music that I like and do myself is getting attention. I thought it was great. I think a lot of people did. There's always going to be jealousies.
Well,
and
also it was more, I want to say jealousies. I would say it's a genre change.
Like
you said, like the guys in Wicker Park are more interested in a different kind of music than
exactly.
Power
well,
pop.
Well, the thing is,
know?
We also were not shy about, saying that we wanted to be on a major label, making as we call them big league records. You know, we wanted to sell records. We didn't want to like pretend that like, oh, you like us, but you're not the kind of person that we want you to like us. You know, we just never played that game. And so I think there were some people, especially back then, the climate of back then. Today, that like every young band wants to have work, that's willing to work, that's good, that's talented. They want to work and be as successful as they want to be. But back then, if you were to like say it was almost like, well, that's not cool.
Yeah.
That's not cool. You want to sell records? It's like, well, you're going to pay my rent. You're going to pay my electric bill and stuff.
Right. In studio with me, Ted Ansani, Mike Zelenko, and Phil Angotti. We're talking to Material Reissue. Let's take a break, come back. We'll get your last song tonight here in Studio 435. They're playing at Metro on March 4th, sharing the bill with the Bad Examples and the Lilacs. They're our guests tonight at Studio 435. We'll take a break. Stay with us. It's 720 WGN, The Download. I'm Justin Kaufman. Studio 435 with Material Reissue live. Ted Ansani, Mike Zelenko, and Phil Angotti are here. They are playing at Metro on March 4th. They're sharing the bill with Bad Examples and the Lilacs. It's a Lilacs reunion show. It's been a pleasure to have these guys in studio tonight talking about the glory days, talking about music, talking about Material Issue. Material Reissue, here they are with the track live in studio, The Next Big Thing.
I met her at a bar where I often sit down and have myself a drink. She played my favorite song before I had time to think. Bought her round and she pounded it down, let out a laugh like a freight train. We exchanged small talk, doesn't it feel like rain? She said, you and I are two of a kind, not afraid to dream. We could have been the next big thing. She told me her roommate was was gone for the weekend. Borrowed a car and took off with a boyfriend. They'd be marrying soon. Was it December or June? She was an artist with a two-bedroom apartment. Her dad kept it going on a weekly allowance. She'd be graduating soon. Was it December or June? And she said, you and I are two of a kind, not afraid to dream. We could have been the next big thing. So I bought her one more and she stared at the door, watching the parade moving out near him. She made fun of their clothes. She said that I could never be one of those. So I thought to myself, it's just like everybody else, standing at the station but missing the train. I turned to gauge her expression. She walked back home in the rain. And she said, you and I, two of a kind, not afraid to dream. We could have been the next big thing. The next big thing. The next big thing. The next big thing.
Material reissue in studio, Ted Ansani, Mike Zelenko, and Phil Angotti. They are playing at the Metro on March 4th with the Bad Examples and the Lilacs. Material reissue in studio. It's a pleasure, guys. I mean, it really is to have you guys in studio to hear your music. If you want to hear Valerie Loves Me, you got to go to the show, right?
Right.
Yeah. And we just got to mention we're going to have a couple of guitar players playing with us that night. We've got Jay O'Rourke from the Insiders playing with us also that night, and Lou Hollis. Sweet Lou Hollis from The Difference and the Penthouse Suites.
How fun is it for you guys to be able to get back on stage, to do this, to promote the shows, to feel like, you know, it's the gang's back together?
Yeah. I'd be at home playing with my fire stick right now. That's great. Thanks for having us. And also, with those additional musicians, some of the songs are a little more fuller sounding, so... Back in the day, it was just the three of us.
Right.
But so now we got second guitar parts and some keyboard parts and stuff that were on the recordings. And we've gotten feedback from old fans saying that it's the best we've ever sounded.
All right.
Yeah.
All right.
Hope to see you all there.
There you go. There it's Metro, March 4th, The Bad Examples and the Lilacs. Again, Ted Ansani, Mike Zelenko, and Phil Angotti. Material reissue. Thanks, guys. Thanks
for being
here.
Thank you, Justin. Thank you.